Gail King, and welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Tuesday, July 7th, take us with you, because we want to go with you. A heartbreaking end for the U.S. men's soccer team at the World Cup. Did you see it? We're going to hear from the players and talk with a former national team captain about what he thinks went wrong. Then Prince Harry is back in the U.K., but Buckingham Palace is not rolling out the red carpet. We'll tell you why. Harry had to find somewhere else to stay. It was an unusual back and forth. Plus, here's something. Have you heard about this? People are drinking raw milk. Why? Dr. Celine Gounder gives us a reality check on whether this viral health trend is safe. I don't know about that one. And we've got a big announcement. This one from the reigning National Women's Soccer League champs, Gotham FC. An award-winning actor and rapper, Common, is in the house today. He's talking about the new season of his hit sci-fi drama, Silo. It's on Apple TV, and it's in its third season and doing very well, and so is he. All that and more just ahead.
All right, we are going to begin with the sudden end to a history-making World Cup run by the U.S. men's team. It was a crushing loss to Belgium, who scored four goals, including one from this costly goalkeeping mistake that left the net wide open. Now, it was a wild ride for the U.S. team, packed with controversial calls and a stunning red card intervention by President Trump. Nicole Valdez was at last night's match and joins us now with more. Nicole, good morning. It was not the result that we were all hoping for.
Nate, good morning. The U.S. men's World Cup journey is over, leaving fans across the country devastated. The Americans fell to Belgium last night, closing the book on a tournament filled with records, controversy, and a run that may have changed the future of soccer in the United States.
Now don't concede another. Lukaku on the loose ball.
The U.S. men's World Cup dream came to a disappointing end Monday night, despite a stunning free kick from Malik Tillman just before the half.
Tillman over the net scores! Malik Tillman! Lightning strikes twice!
The defense struggled to stay organized, at one point leaving the goal open for Belgium to take a shot after the goalkeeper stepped out of the box to try to cut off a pass.
Tim Ream can't block.
The U.S. never recovered, and in the end, Belgium won 4-1.
It's going to be a hard one to stomach for this team, the coaches, the fans.
Tonight was not a good performance, probably overall. It's not what we look to achieve.
The loss followed days of controversy off the field. Flo Balogun was cleared to play just hours before kickoff after FIFA overturned the one-game suspension he got for a red card against Bosnia-Herzegovina, a decision that came after President Trump asked the FIFA president to review the play.
Ultimately, it didn't go the way we wanted to today, but don't think the antics of the last 24 hours had anything to do with it.
Despite the abrupt end, it was one of the most successful World Cup campaigns in team history, with the first knockout stage win since 2002, a program record 11 goals, and a group stage that rewrote the record book.
If you look at what we've done, I don't think the conversation should die down. I think it should be how incredible this journey has been with this group.
The tournament drew big crowds, big attention, and a new wave of fans.
How are you feeling after this result?
We're going to wait for four more years.
Yeah! Proving the one thing that can't be crushed is the American spirit.
Now, the last men's World Cup helped spark the creation of Major League Soccer, and it inspired a generation of players, many of which we saw take the pitch last night. Now, those very same players hope this tournament leaves a legacy of its own. Nate.
All right, Nicole, thank you. Joining us now is five-time captain of the U.S. men's national team, Jimmy Conrad. He's also an analyst for CBS Sports' Galazzo Network across its match day coverage. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so you posted on X one word. Pain. Now, listen, we felt like it was lining up for USA. Yeah. We had a star player back in the lineup.
Yeah.
The crowd in Seattle was amazing. Against a somewhat inconsistent Belgium team, what happened?
How much time do we have?
Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack here. Ultimately, there's a couple things. Some that are off the field. We had some intervention into getting our best player, one of our best players, Flo Balogun, back into the team after his red card. Unprecedented. Never happened before in a World Cup.
Intervention from the President of the United States.
Yes. Yeah. So that, I think, added a layer of complexity, let's say, to what was happening. And then when the game got going, we just were a little bit behind it. I feel like you need players to be 7 or 8 out of 10. You mm-hmm. need the majority of your team to be yeah. in that position to win any game of consequence.
Yep.
And we had guys that were playing at 4 out of 5. And who's to say that was because of what was happening off the field? But and in some ways, maybe it inspired Belgium to want to stick it to us as well, because I thought yeah. they were very sharp. Yeah.
But this is the thing. When you go online and look at the comments, people online are not feeling bad for USA. Some people are calling it karma. You guys got exactly what you deserved. And because the loss was so wide, too, do you think there's some truth in that?
I think what's disappointing, well, yes, there's always two ways to look at anything, right? There's yes. the emotional side of it, yes. and there's the unemotional. Emotionally, yes, I'm disappointed. I am still in pain. I'm working through my emotional process.
Right. Everybody is today.
Yeah, and as we heard from one of the fans, we got 4 years to kind of yeah. dissect what we need to do to be better in 2030. Then there's the unemotional side. Belgium were just better than us on the day. They made the key plays. The margins are so fine at the World Cup.
No doubt.
And when you make a small mistake at this level, yeah. you get punished. We Oof. Made some big mistakes, and we kind of handed them the game.
But
and that's
Jimmy,
what's probably the most disappointing.
As a player, how does that not get in your head, all of the swirl that's happening outside of the game?
Well, they're professionals, so you like to think that you can kind of church and state it a little bit. Where, yeah, where you could just kind of leave what's off the field off the field.
Compartmentalize it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of it, as you know, right? You need to have a little bit of that in you. When I went through it and I played in my World Cup, I learned very quickly. It's not what you do before yeah. the whistle blows or what you do after the whistle blows. It's what you do when the whistle blows.
Mm.
And I thought that Belgium were a little bit more locked in and ready to go, yeah. and we just didn't rise to the occasion. And that's what's most disappointing, I think, for all the fans, is that we had this opportunity to prolong this conversation. Like, soccer's here,
yes.
we're going to do it.
Yep.
And we had great momentum, and now we've just kind of stumbled, and now we're leaving everybody with a feeling of disappointment.
Yeah, people.
Well,
really
but there's four more years. Hopefully yeah. they rebuild and get back.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. ultimately what we need to do, is kind of reflect on what we need to do better.
Yeah.
People were pulling for us. Jimmy, great to have you here.
Yeah, good to have
you.
Thank you so much.
Fun.
President Trump's decision to wade into the controversy over Flo Balogun's World Cup suspension is following him now overseas. So right now you're looking at pictures from the airbase in Turkey. That's where the president just touched down for a NATO summit. Ed O'Keefe landed in Turkey. He was ahead of the president. Ed, good morning to you. What did Trump have to say about this World Cup intervention? And what's been the reaction so far over there?
Yeah, good to see you. He did confirm on Monday that he did reach out to FIFA head Gianni Infantino and asked for a review of the decision, which, of course, ended with Balogun being able to play last night. The president said he thought that that red card had been, quote, very unfair, and he had asked FIFA to review its decision. Of course, they ended up doing that. Several European governments and the head of Europe's Football Association complained, expressing opposition to the move, if only because such a reversal is so rare during a World Cup. Belgium formally appealed the decision. FIFA rejected it, but then, of course, Belgium went on to win the game. Secretary of State Marco Rubio conceded that the issue may actually come up here at the NATO summit later today as the American leaders come to meet with their European counterparts. Of course, soccer is a helpful bit of small talk at these kind of diplomatic meetings anyway, Gail.
So, and, you know, soccer, of course, isn't the main issue at hand. The war in Ukraine, of course, is at the top of the agenda. So Russia's been launching these waves of strikes on Kyiv in recent days. So what do you think the president is hoping to accomplish as he and the Europeans are now, it seems, on the same page?
Yeah, well, once things get underway here, he is going to begin with a formal meeting with Turkey's President Erdogan. The president says they have such a good relationship. That's really the only reason he was willing to come to the summit this year. The president also likely to call out alliance members for their unwillingness to help the U.S. during the early days of the war with Iran. And the issue of Ukraine is going to be top of mind for many of these leaders as well. To that end, the president is set to meet with Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky tomorrow as Ukraine tries to sort out with the United States and NATO a way forward. Gail?
All right, Ed, thank you. We'll talk to you later. And now to Prince Harry's return to the UK for a visit that's being overshadowed by a dispute with Buckingham Palace. The palace says Harry will not be staying there during his week-long trip. They said that he missed a deadline to accept an invitation. There's also uncertainty over whether Harry's wife, that would be Meghan, and their two children will join him. Here to break it all down for us is CBS News Royal contributor Roy Anika. Roy, good morning to you. This is confusing for a lot of people because earlier it said that he was staying and now he's not. What has happened?
Morning, Gail.
Hi.
Well, this whole trip this week here has been completely overshadowed by this ongoing war of words between Harry and his camp and Buckingham Palace and the King. And we had all expected possibly that Harry would stay in a royal residence, Buckingham Palace. We knew the King had offered him a place to stay. The mood music around that was that Harry didn't want to do that. We then heard very dramatically yesterday morning from Harry's camp that he would be staying. Minutes later, Buckingham Palace corrected that and said he won't be staying. He didn't meet the deadline. He ignored the offer, rejected it, and then accepted it. On top of that, crucially, we've been told by Buckingham Palace and sources close to the king there was nervousness and what's been described as a constitutional complexity around the fact that that long-running court battle against the publishers of the Daily Mail, which we are due to hear the judgment on that today, there was a feeling it was a bit of nervousness that if Harry went to stay at Buckingham Palace just hours after that judgment came, that might place the king in a difficult constitutional situation. So it is slight chaos.
It does seem like it's chaos and a failure to communicate, really, on both sides. But, Roya, is there any chance then, you know, we've heard that Meghan and the kids were not going to be able to go along with Harry. Any chance that the children will get a chance to see their grandfather again on this trip?
Well, we know that Meghan and the kids aren't now coming to London, but what Harry's team haven't ruled out yet is Meghan and the children joining him later in the week when his trip moves up to the Midlands. He's doing a couple of engagements in Birmingham. The problem is, as Gail mentioned, this breakdown in communication means it's very hard to schedule things because the king is a very busy man. His diary is planned 6 months in advance and each day is packed with engagements. That said, I'm sure, despite all the breakdown in communication, I know Harry is still very keen to try and make it work and for Archie and Lily to be able to see their grandfather. And regardless of the relationship between Harry and the king, I know he wants to see his grandchildren, who he hasn't seen for more than 4 years. So watch this space. It's going to be logistically challenging, but neither side has ruled that out.
Yeah, and we know the king is very busy. His calendar is very full. But if he wanted it to happen, couldn't he make that happen? And what is happening with William and Harry? But the king could make this happen if he wanted it to be, don't you think?
I think the king probably could make it happen if he wanted to. And like I said, that has not been ruled out. We are only on Tuesday. This is going to be a very long week with a lot happening every day, all eyes on whether that meeting will happen. In terms of the brothers, William and Harry, absolutely no chance they'll be seeing each other on this trip over by Harry. They haven't spoken for more than 4 years. It's a complete non-starter, that relationship. No comms whatsoever. Still very sad, and I don't see that changing anytime soon, unfortunately.
Yeah, I still hold out hope. I see William and Kate and their kids, and their cousins have never met. I still hope that they can all work it out one day. Roy and Nika, we thank you. It's time for a look at the stories that caught our eye. With us now, Kelly O'Grady on deck to do the honors. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning to you, Gail. All right, we're going to begin with news of yet another White House makeover. The president says he's building a, quote, beautiful granite helipad on the White House South Lawn. He says it's needed because the next generation of Marine helicopters will likely damage the grass every time they land. And the project is expected to cost between $5 and $6 million. The president says the company that makes the new helicopter, that's Sikorsky, will cover the cost. And turning now to dramatic damages of a dam bursting in China. You got to see this. It sent a torrent of mud tree branches and debris rushing through towns and villages. Some people were even spotted on rooftops waving for help. This is after a typhoon unleashed days of torrential rain, flooding, and landslides. Several people have died and tens of thousands are missing. The rain is expected to continue for days. And back here at home, Walmart is slashing prices on thousands of items, including beef. Now remember, record high beef prices have strained the wallets of U.S. consumers for months now. Other price cuts include produce, household products, toys, and apparel. The retailer says they are to help customers make the most of the summer season. On Monday, President Trump appeared to take credit for the move, but a statement by Walmart made no mention of the administration's involvement in the decision. And finally, Powerball is jumping across the pond, so it's expanding to include players in the United Kingdom now. Tickets will be available for purchase starting on July 1st, followed by a drawing the next day. The move is expected to boost jackpots at a faster rate. Not much, though, going to change for American players, with ticket prices and drawing times staying the same. You know, guys, back to Walmart for a second. This is kind of interesting because, you know, you think about Walmart, they are so big. They have the benefit of a little extra room on their margins.
Yeah.
And if it gets more people in the doors because they're coming in for their sales, that could actually be really good for Walmart.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good business strategy. Yeah. Thank you very much, Kelly. Now to the case against the man accused of killing Charlie Kirk, and a critical legal step. Utah prosecutors aim to convince a judge there is enough evidence to move forward with a murder trial against Tyler Robinson. He has not yet entered a plea. Kirk, as you know, was shot and killed during a rally at Utah Valley University back in September. Carter Evans was in court for the start of this five-day preliminary hearing.
Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica, arrived at the preliminary hearing flanked by security. In court, she sat behind Tyler Robinson, the man accused of assassinating her husband at a Utah Valley University rally last September. On Monday, prosecutors began presenting their case against Robinson to prove they have enough evidence to move forward with a murder trial. Kirk's family looked uncomfortable at times and left the courtroom during emotional moments. As attorneys on both sides argued over admissibility of graphic footage, the judge visibly winced while watching one of the videos.
Mr. Gernander, your witness.
First on the stand, former university police officer Christopher Bagley.
What did you see? What did you hear?
I heard an individual talking to Charlie, and I happened to kind of glance over the edge of the railing about that time. And then I heard a shot fired.
Bagley said he believed the shot came from the rooftop of a nearby building. Robinson turned himself in the day after the killing. Prosecutors say they have his DNA on the rifle used in the shooting, along with his messages allegedly confessing to the murder. For CBS Mornings, I'm Carter Evans in Provo, Utah.
CBS News legal analyst Caroline Polisi joins us now to break it all down. Good morning. So tell us more about this preliminary hearing and why it's so unique.
Yeah, this is not a trial. I mean, it is being dubbed as a mini trial, but it's sort of a unique feature of Utah law. What we're essentially seeing is like a grand jury process where you get to that probable cause to move forward with a trial. So all the prosecutors need to do here is show that there's enough probable cause to move on to an actual trial.
Okay.
We all just get to see it, the benefit of seeing it because of Utah law. What I'm watching for really is we're getting just the beginning of the glimpses of the defense's potential arguments here. They're pushing back on the authentication of the evidence. They won a motion yesterday to keep out this video compilation of the day of the shooting because they said it was altered. They said it gave the impression that it was one person. So there's a clue there. She questioned Catherine Nestor, the lead defense attorney. She questioned one of the law enforcement officers about a gun holster that was left at the scene. She questioned, you know, just the overall security, trying to point out how it was sort of lax. So you can see where they're going, which I find interesting.
But there is a mountain of evidence against Tyler Robinson. I mean, he also turned himself in the next day. Carter Evans talked about the DNA evidence on the gun. And of course, all those videos, as you mentioned, that compilation, I mean, it was recorded by many people who were there live at that event. So that creates a pretty hard foundation to go against, right?
Absolutely. The evidence is overwhelming. And I think what we will see, remember, this is 5 days, but some of the most compelling evidence does come from his roommate slash romantic partner, Lance Twiggs. We supposedly are going to hear a recorded audio of Lance Twiggs getting in all of those text messages. Remember, we essentially have a confession through those text messages.
Right.
There was a letter left underneath his computer. Interestingly, the defense won't get to cross Lance Twiggs, which they were upset about. But the judge said at this point, you can let in hearsay evidence. No question in my mind, they will meet the probable cause standard.
Yeah.
As you noted, this will move to a trial. This is just the beginning.
I can't imagine, though, what it's like for Erica Kirk to sit in a courtroom and see the man who many people saw on video kill your husband. What do you make of her attendance and what effect, if any, will that have?
Look, this is a really difficult case to watch. You saw the judge even flinch there when watching the video recorded images of what happened. You also have Tyler Robinson's parents were in attendance as well in a closed courtroom. Now, there's no jury here during this proceeding, but that has an effect on jurors, right? When you see the victim's parents and wife in attendance every day. I mean, it's gut-wrenching. So that will have an effect.
All right, no doubt. More to come. Thank you very much, Caroline.
Up next, as the U.S. hosts the Men's World Cup, we have a big-time announcement from the reigning National Women's Soccer League champs, Gotham FC. Big-time announcement, so stick around. We'll be back.
Need a little bit of this in milk, superfood as well. It's good for us, it's good for our stomach, it's good for our skin, good for our bones and muscles. That's why I drink it.
That is Norwegian World Cup star Erling Haaland on why he likes raw, unpasteurized milk. online influencers pitch raw milk as a cure-all. Well, but this year, more than 80 illnesses related to raw milk have been reported in the U.S. And our medical correspondent, Dr. Celine Gounder, is here to break it down for us. She's also editor-at-large for public health at KFF Health News. Good morning, Dr. Gounder. You don't get to be 6'6 like Erling Haaland because of raw milk. That is
bad genetics.
Genetics, exactly. But even my own son, I'm having this fight with my teenage son at home. He is buying into this whole raw milk craze. Why this surge?
Look, this is marketing. It's being marketed as a natural cure-all online on social media. But as you noted, there have been outbreaks related to raw milk in Idaho alone, more than 60 cases just since May. Wow. And that's among those who are reporting, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people may be going under the radar. And then you, on top of that, you have the risk of bird flu in dairy herds, something we've been dealing with over the last couple of years. And on top of that, the number of cases could be growing unnoticed because of declines in CDC surveillance. So last year, the CDC made the reporting of several of these germs that you might find in raw milk optional. Mm. So that tracing network, network FoodNet, which includes Campylobacter, the one causing the Idaho outbreak, and Listeria, are optional.
Okay, so you're talking about bird flu as well. So what are the health risks? What are the symptoms if somebody, if they are intaking, ingesting raw milk?
Well, let's start with how big the risk actually is. So plenty of people, like Haaland, may drink raw milk and feel fine, but a report published by the CDC in 2017 looked at, for the same amount of milk consumed, raw milk caused about 840 times more illness and 45 times more hospitalizations than pasteurized milk. That is not a healthy choice. And regulation varies from state to state, and safety testing varies from farm to farm. So it's not all the same. These outbreaks have prompted recalls across the country. Mm-hmm. And the worst cases, almost always in young kids, cause a kidney complication called hemolytic uremic syndrome.
Oh, my.
And the warning sign for parents to know is bloody diarrhea. So that warrants a same-day call to the doctor, because that's a sign you could be tipping into kidney failure.
The more you speak, the less attractive it becomes. You know, I milked a cow years ago on a story, and you're pulling on the udder, and this stuff is raw milk really means comes out of the nipple of the cow into the glass. And you just think, how in the world could that be healthy? So what are the benefits? Because it's clearly working for some people.
Well, I wouldn't say it's working. They might be getting away with it.
It's different from
it's working, right? And a few things to know. Pasteurization does not strip the nutrition that matters. People have also looked at this for lactose intolerance. There is no benefit.
What if you use yogurt, if you make raw milk with yogurt?
It is.
Make yogurt with raw milk. Is that better?
Yeah, yogurt and cheese made with raw milk are safer, but that's not the same thing as safe. Mm-hmm. And look, the natural label is marketing. There is no official definition. Mm-hmm. So anybody can call something natural. It may taste richer, creamier, sweeter, grassier, but it's definitely not safer for you. And a century ago, raw milk used to spread tuberculosis, typhoid. It killed infants. And that's why we regulated and started pasteurizing.
So you're not drinking it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Her face said it all.
Yeah, aside
from clear.
Aside from the illnesses, I'm not going to try it. Because I feel like if I do, my stomach's going to sound like I put Timberlands in a dryer. So I'll pass. Dr. Gounder, thank you so much.
New York sports, they've been on a roll lately. Go Knicks. Now the reigning National Women's Soccer League champs, Gotham FC, have a big announcement today.
Yo, women's soccer coming to New York.
These Gotham FC games look mad fun.
I think it's up to seven.
Gotham FC is headed to Queens.
That's right. Beginning in 2028, Gotham FC will move their home games from New Jersey to Etihad Park. Ooh. Look at that. Gorgeous. In Queens, New York. It's the first soccer-specific stadium to be built in the city. Joining us for her first broadcast interview about the move is Gotham's FC governor, Carolyn Tisch Blodgett, because we now don't say owner, we say governor. Hello, governor. Hello, governor.
You.
So you guys are doing something right. Two championships in the last three seasons. Why did you think, Carolyn, now is the time to move at this particular time and here of all places?
So when we came in as new owners 2.5 years ago, we set the vision to be one of the best sports teams in the world. And this move is the next chapter in that. As you said, we've won 2 championships in the last 3 years. So we've clearly demonstrated success on the field. Now it's our chance to do that off the field as well and really create a match day experience that matches our ambition.
Yeah, but your family knows something about winning sports teams. Your family co-owns the Giants. So you, as a little kid, you grew up watching sports teams in the family. And now it used to be that you said about women's sports, can they survive? And now the question is so much bigger than that.
Exactly. So I grew up in the New York Giants family. And what was clear from the beginning is that sports are more than just the players on the field. They are really, they bring a community together. They are a community asset. And as owners, it is your job to leave the asset, leave the club better than you found it. And so when we came in a few years ago, there was a question of can a women's sports team survive? And now we're sitting here saying, what is the best possible stage for a women's sports team? And as you said, there's no better sports stage than New York City.
There and there's go. A lot of investment being made here as well, because along with the new facility, there's going to be a new training facility as well that is going to be in New Jersey. How will that work with the team playing in Queens?
Yeah, so we announced a few months ago that we will have our first ever dedicated training facility. For so long, Gotham, like so many women's teams, were always in borrowed spaces. We were always a tenant. We were always kind of working around other schedules. Now, this is really, so announcing our training facility and now our stadium are really two parts of the same vision, which is to create a permanent home for Gotham, for a women's team. And so we will have a best-in-class training facility in New Jersey and a best-in-class home game day experience at Etihad Park in New York.
So. I remember playing for the Seattle Seahawks, and we changed practice facilities. And I remember that our first day in there, everything was brand new. And it just gave us that extra motivation because we felt like the team, the city, everybody cared about us much more than just being athletes on game day. And that's from a player's perspective. From an owner's perspective, what do you see when it comes to the response from your team when decisions like this are made?
It was, of all the people I've gotten the chance to tell about this news, probably the most special was telling the players.
I know.
So many of our players have lived through kind of the ups and downs of women's sports. And they've been in stadiums where there's, you know, hundreds of fans, not thousands. They've been in borrowed training facilities. They've been on everyone else's schedule. Now to be able to have their own locker room, their own training facility that was custom designed for them is incredibly special.
Are you looking at the plans of the layout? Now, I'm asking this specifically when it comes to the bathroom doors. Could you please make sure there's no cracks, that the things go all the way flush, so you're not sitting on the toilet watching people walk by?
That is to be number one.
Are you looking at the plans that closely?
Is this autobiographical, Gail?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is.
Gail, is that you?
I can promise. But
are you looking at the plans? Are you looking at the plans?
I am looking at every single detail. This is this is the biggest investment anyone has ever made in this club's history. We are looking at every single detail to make sure that it is custom designed for women, by women, really focused on what is right for our player experience.
And it's for next year, right?
Yes, exactly. We'll be practicing.
Bravo, Carolyn.
Awesome. So glad you're here doing this with us. Carolyn Tisch Blodgett, thank you.
Talk
of the Tables coming up next. Stick around. It is time for the stories that are the talk of the table this morning. All right, Nate, you're up first. What you got first?
I'm up first? No. I want to give it to Gail first.
Oh, am I first? Okay.
You're up first.
Okay, I'll go first.
Pass it to Gail.
Okay, my talk of the table, because Nate can't get enough of the Taylor Swift wedding news.
That's right.
Now comes word that one of her backup dancers is being accused of a wedding fashion faux pas. What'd she do? Tori Evans, it's her name, shared a video of the light-colored dress that she wore to Swift's wedding last week. Traditional thinking says guests should avoid wearing white to a wedding. Evan's husband says it's pink champagne. But some people online say, well, it's too close to white, Ms. Evans. We don't know the dress code for Taylor and Travis's wedding. But here's what some of the other guests wore, including champagne adjacent dresses. So she's getting a lot of negative income.
So
online.
Ladies, okay. Thoughts?
But number one, if she says it's pale pink, I just think it's unfair to, she's really being brutally attacked online.
Really?
People are so vicious because they said, why would you do that? And they said, if you have to explain it, that it's blush, then maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's wrong.
Well, it's hard to tell.
I feel for her.
Photo, but yeah. But
I feel for her.
Yeah.
It looks white in that picture.
I don't think anybody deserves to say, to be attacked, though.
It does look a little white in the picture.
That is true.
And everybody knows that you don't wear
that's
white.
That's a no-no.
I think you just big avoid no-no. Any just category avoid. Of white.
Ah.
Even if it's pinkish white.
I got you.
But I just feel bad for her. I'm just saying, please give her a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're so vicious and so
no trolling. No trolling online.
Yes.
All right. Now, here's my talk of the table. Okay, this is... This is a woman's uncomfortable car ride that sparked a little bit of a panic. This is a mother and a daughter. They were driving back home with some plywood in the trunk. Now, unfortunately, the daughter had to sit in the back of the SUV to hold on to it. So you see, her legs are sticking out from under the trunk. Now, along the way, EMS workers spotted the vehicle, specifically, you know, again, looking at a car with feet dangling from the trunk. So understandably, you know, they called the police because they were concerned
about
what's going on there that this happened. Take a look.
I'm surprised the police weren't called on it.
Oh, they are.
Don't be disturbed. We had a very unusual call. The EMS workers behind you, the ambulance, saw feet hanging out of the back of the vehicle.
My feet were never like leaving the car. I just was sitting in the truck because there was no other space to be.
I completely understand seeing the contraption you guys have now.
Yes.
I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad that's all it was.
Fortunately, everybody's okay.
That is hilarious.
No tickets were written.
It is dangerous, though. If your feet are dangling out, then it's not closed. So that's kind
if
of
that
a
comes down on your feet. That could have been a real bad accident.
Yeah.
So.
But back in the day, in the 80s and 90s, you used to sit in the back of a flatbed.
Yes.
Possibly like, get in the back.
Yeah. And we've all
hanging on for dear life on the freeway.
Yeah. So you're hanging onto the Christmas tree on top of the roof, right? Come on, we've all done that move.
No. All right, my talk of the table is a World Cup fan from England who went missing for 10 days while traveling to Boston. So his family was worried. Officials got involved. People were searching. And then he was found completely safe and sound in Barcelona, bar hopping, watching soccer. Turns out he lost his phone. He couldn't access his tickets to his flights.
Sure.
But he figured, I've got my passport, a little money, the match is on. I'm good. This might be the most man thing ever. You give a guy a bar stool, sports on TV, some good eats, and a cold beer, and he might not even realize he's at the center of an international search. So my question for y'all, for everybody here, what is your Barcelona bar? That one simple place, hobby or activity where time disappears and nobody can reach you.
Oh, good question.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm in Barcelona at the Tapas bar with that guy.
No doubt. Bar hopping somewhere is fun, especially when you're with a group of friends. You don't touch your phone. You're just enjoying the moment.
But I love that he was totally oblivious.
Right.
Yeah, had no
and
idea.
10 days.
10 days.
10 days.
10 days without talking to relatives.
Kids,
I don't know.
Wife, family.
He probably was enjoying the free time. The me time.
He's like, see y'all.
He's like, you know what? I might just be gone for good.
Yeah.
All right.
The hit Apple TV show, did you catch that part? Hit Apple TV show Silo's back for a third season. It's about a dystopian society of 10,000 people living below ground under very, how shall we say, mysterious circumstances. So Oscar, Emmy, and Grammy Award winner Common stars as Robert Sims. He is one of the Silo's top officials. And in this clip, his character is confronted by Juliet. She is Silo's reluctant new mayor about the memory she lost since we last saw her in season 2.
Who are you?
I'm Robert Sims. I'm the judge of the Silo.
No. I know. You tell me that. I don't know you. I don't know anyone, right? I look at myself in the mirror and I don't even know who's looking back at me. And I thought maybe I had remembered something, but it's gone. And what, you're gonna tell me it's a dream? It's a dream?
Is it a dream? That is the question. Common joins us now. Let me just say, Common's one of the most well-dressed man in the room. Please put up the picture, Nate. You'll like this. I went to say hi to him when he came.
Uh-huh.
This is the clothes he brought.
Oh, my God.
Try to decide what to wear
today. Always fly. Yes. Always fly, Gail.
I know, with his team. They just said, yeah. No, he was trying to decide what is the look he's going for. Did he pass?
He nailed it.
Look at the shoes.
As always.
Amazing.
Come on now.
Look at the shoes.
I have a wonderful team, wonderful stylist.
And you look so good.
I just want to express myself. Y'all look so fly.
Look at the shoes.
The shoes are, yeah.
But your character, Robert Sims, also well-dressed. And you've said, this isn't somebody you want to spend time with, but when you read this character, you said, I want to do this.
Yeah.
What was it?
It was because, like, I think in acting, you get to explore humanity in a way that you don't normally. Like, Robert Sims is a character that works for the government. He's like on the side of the powers that be. That's not me. That's not Rashid. That's not Common. But to get to learn and understand a human being that is in that position is something that I was interested in. It's like one of those things where, you know, understanding brings you closer to humanity in a way.
Yes.
You don't have to agree with the person either. Like, I don't necessarily agree with everything Robert Sims does.
Yep.
But playing this character makes me understand why he would do those things.
Yeah.
And you also understand that this person has a family.
Yeah.
He has a dad, a child, a wife.
And a, yes.
Those are things we don't think about sometimes. And especially when you play a killer. Like,
oh, he's a killer. Yeah.
He kills somebody. Yeah, and you did it very well, too.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, whoa.
As you mentioned, you know, there's that question of who do I work for? What am I doing it for?
Yeah.
And this character is complex because you get to see all of these sides and his climb for a position of power, but also understanding I am a father.
Yeah.
I am a husband.
Yeah.
So I am doing it for them as well. Why is it important to show that side?
Well, it's something because we, all of us at some point in life, like, want to get to a certain position, right?
Right.
And that position seems so valuable. But what Robert understood is even in getting and not getting that position, the things that were most valuable was his family and actually, like, integrity and being a human being. So it's like, power is something because power will bring out the truth in you.
no.
Robert, thank God, is going through the complexities of understanding what his truth is instead of just getting power and being like, I'm gonna abuse it.
Right.
So it's a strong thing.
Speaking of power, though, I mean, his wife and he kind of have this power struggle going on, right? Yeah. Because she got the top job that he wanted. So how is that sort of playing out in the season?
That is real dynamics. I mean, as a man, like, wanting to be in a certain position and then your wife gets the position, you have to, it's a really humbling situation. And you have to get out of your feelings and understand that, like, okay, maybe we can do this as a team. And she's in that position and she deserves it. But it's a trust that's broken in this season three.
Let's just say there's a lot of twists and turns. It's so good. I just say you have to watch episode 5 where it takes a total thing that you didn't see coming with your character. But let's just talk about you, Common.
Right.
On stage at the Obama Presidential Center, you killed it. You spoke there.
Thank you.
Tribute to Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
Killed it.
Amazing.
Thanks.
It was amazing. On stage with Jennifer Hudson, longtime partner. I mean, it's just so great to see you doing so many things. How are you feeling
about
it?
And to get that call, Gail.
Yes.
When these big moments are needed
in
the culture.
We need Common, yes.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that call, like, okay, I'm in my calling. You know, like, when I get a call to be at the opening of the Obama Center and what they mean to society, the hope, the inspiration that they brought to us, the integrity that they brought to the whole country. I didn't feel separate from anybody at that event.
Ooh. Everybody felt so connected. And then on stage with Lauryn Hill, who I know
have a tight
relationship with her too.
She's one of my favorite artists of all time. One of the greatest artists. She represents women, she represents black women, she represents God in so many ways. And just to be up there with Queen Latifah and all these great, like, I told Queen Latifah, I said, listen, I approached this whole thing like I'm your hype man. It wasn't like I'm your hype man on this show, because I felt like this was a time that women were being honored and celebrated.
Yes. I love that.
And then you're on stage with Jennifer Hudson. I remember when you two started dating. I'm so happy for you guys because I'm trying to decide if and when there's a wedding. I don't know if I sit on the bride side or the groom side. What should I do?
But, I mean, you.
What should I do?
You can sit on Jennifer's side, but you really, really close and cool with me too. But we both from the South Side. So
yes.
The South Side with us.
But she's an EGOT winner, Oscar, Grammy, Tony.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I love theater. I would love to achieve that.
I could see you doing that.
God willing, you know, that will happen. But I'm going to do theater because I love it. And then what comes with it, comes with it.
And we love you. Common, thank you so much. We appreciate it. You can watch new episodes of Silo every Friday on Apple TV.
It's so good. That'll do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Chicago, it's my home.
The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
This The Chi. Anything's possible.
The Chi, the final season now streaming only on Paramount Plus.